Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code DKHOOPS. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code DKHOOPS, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
The VC Show is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it, but you must be 21 or older.
The VC Show, let's go.
All right, what's up, what's up, what's up? Welcome to the VC Show on Omaha Audio. I'm Roz Gold on Wednesday. I'm with the legend himself, Vince Carter. VC, what's good?
Yes, how are sir. You? Oh, man, I'm good. I'm good, man. It's always good, like I said, when we have a guest, and especially when they're like people I know, especially when they're former teammates, especially when they're legendary. That makes everything like much better. So you know how that goes.
Yep. That's a nice little intro, but I'm going to continue to lay down the flowers. It's 11-year NBA veteran and also a New York City legend, a park legend, a street ball legend. And one of the stars of the A1 mixtape tour, Skip to My Lou, Rafer Alston. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I know that you're with us on behalf of Showtime's upcoming documentary, New York City Point Gods, right. Your executive producers, Kevin Durant and Rich Kleiman. It starts streaming July 29th on Showtime, so make sure for all of you watching that you tap in for that. How special was it for you to have your story told alongside other New York City legends like Kenny the Jet Smith, Dwayne Pearl Washington, Mark Jackson, Stephon Marbury? What was that like?
It was great for them to add me into the whole landscape of the New York City point guard era, community, you name it, the everything that it comes with being a New York City point guard, man, for them to put me in it as well. And the reason I say it, because, you know, these guys, a lot of the guys before me, the Kenny Smith, Mark Jackson, Kenny Anderson, Rod Strickland, Pearl White, these are guys we looked up to. These are guys who we idolized our games at. So, you know, and they were all pretty much in the same era. And then you come down to our era, God Sham God, Kareem Reed, Stephon Marbury, myself, we were all around the same age. We were coming up the way those guys were coming up. And another reason why I say it's a thrill and a joy for them to put me in is that those guys had a storybook high school career in which I didn't. But yet those guys, I played against those guys. I played with some of them in AAU ball and summer league ball. They understood the magnitude of what I can do with that ball and what I could do against those guys. And you know, so for them to really notice that and want to put that on the big stage and the big stream, it was phenomenal.
So I'm going to ask it. You know, we talked about it off camera, but I'm going to ask it again. So we talk about everything that you've done that you can do with that ball. Do you still play ball? Are you still hooping?
No, I don't hoop. I don't hoop. The good thing is I stay in the gym. I get the urge. I don't. Every day I go outside. Every time I'm coaching the kids, I'm teaching my son how to play the game. I get the urge, but I quickly stop myself. You know, I may show the kids a drill in practice, and my son a drill when I'm working with him. And if he didn't get it the first time, then he has to catch me tomorrow or the next day because I'm gonna stop right there.
But why? Why is that? Tell everybody why.
At the age I'm at now, I'm scared of that injury. I don't really want to deal with that type of injury. I've been fortunate, you know, in our playing career that I didn't have too many injuries that were lasting, you know, that were going to last, you know, with me through lifetime. So at the age now to sustain that type of injury, you know for sure that injury is going to be with us for a long time, if not the rest of our life.
It's the recovery, man. It's the recovery. And I feel you. Like when I got this story, I had my basketball camp a couple of weeks ago, and kids are like, Vince, can you dunk it? I'm like, yeah. They're like, dunk it. I'm like, nah. Nope.
Not even for the kids?
No. Ross, I got to warm up first. Hey, safety first, man. Like, it's right. like he's telling the truth right Absolutely. Now. Like, it's preparation. Now, I mean, I could do it. Like,
I
did a dunk or two. But,
and for him, it's the kind of dunk they want to see. Right? If it's up to Vince, Vince is going to go with a regular dunk. He's going to throw it in, and that's it. But I know the kind of dunk they want to see. It's like, no, I'm not doing it.
Right. Regular dunk is not. They like, okay, cool. Like, we can see that now from dude, you know, whatever. Like, we want to see the stuff that you were doing. Like, that's what they had. You could still do the reverse 360 windmill. I was like, nah.
All right, dunking is one thing, though. But, Rafer, do you still got good handles?
Oh, like, can you ball handling. Ball handling is something that would never leave me. I've been doing that since they put a ball in my hand at 5 years old. That would never leave me. Like, I could go. I may not dribble the ball for 2-3 weeks at a time, but as soon as I get the ball, I get to handle that ball.
Do you consider yourself an artist? And what is it like working at your craft of coming up with those special moves?
Well, the moves is all thought of. They come up when I'm thinking about a defender or defenders. So it's like if I'm thinking about getting past a defender, and I'm thinking about if another defender steps up real quick, where am I put this basketball? And that's how ball hand for me, because you know basketball is very it's a reaction. You know, you can go in there. You know, I'm not used to training with cones as today's kids are. I was taught training with someone in front of me moving. So I try to teach my son about training. You know, when you get past a cone, there's gonna if the cone slide, if the defender slides with you, or you get past another guy steps up. So the moves I think about and work on is all reaction to what's about or what is going to happen next.
So I'm going to piggyback that because I'm from New York. I'm from Queens. I was highly influenced by N1 Mixtape. I played the Rod Strickland tournament. I played, we played in EBC. We went and watched Dykeman and Kingdom and in the back in Left Rack City. So it was a really like a point of pride being a hooper coming from New York. And I'm curious your perspective on what are the characteristics of a New York City point guard, and how has that evolved over time since when you were playing to now?
It was New York City point guard was toughness. It was crafty creativity. The thrill for the dramatic, right? Everything was driving to the basket because we play so much basketball outside that shooting was something that we weren't good at, to say the least, because everything was driving to the basket in New York City. But with the flair for the dramatic, the passion, and the upfront in your face style like basketball is a New York City point guard. And it was before me, it was dumber me, it was coming after me, and I had a chance to go back to New York recently, and it's still there. It's still there. The playground game, all those tournaments you mentioned, they're still there. I went by Kingdom. The crowd is back out there. I went by Dykeman. The crowd is out there. I had a chance to coach in the my own team, the TBT. That's still going on now.
Yeah.
And the crowd is
out. At the at the Rucker, right?
Yep, the excitement. Yes, ma'am. The excitement is out there. And then you have the other, like, you know, so one thing about people don't understand about New York City is that they hear about the Dykeman, they hear about Rucker Park. But we're known for so many tournaments. I mean, every day you have a game outside somewhere. And that was the beauty of growing up during those times is that you had to face one of those other good guards someday during the week, every week. And sometimes it might be in their backyard. Like, you might have to go to Brooklyn and play Stephon Marbury. You might have to go to Harlem and play God Sham God. They might have to come to Queens and face me. So we had an opportunity to face each other on a consistent basis, which prepared us for what lied ahead if we played major college basketball, which all of us had the luxury to do. Vince went to a school in North Carolina where they would almost pride themselves on getting a New York City point guard ever since the 80s.
That's a fact.
70s, 80s, all the way to when Vince played with Ed Cota, who I just had the luxury to run into. His son plays now, but... that's another guy that, you know, like, there's so many point guards, and then now that I just think of his name, that's another guy that should be on that list because his journey was kind of similar to mine. It's like we didn't have this storybook high school career, but yet we were able to salvage our basketball and take it to another level.
Skip, how were you able to separate yourself from all of those other names, you know, I know Steph's, you know, well, Steph was, everybody's right there. So how would you able to separate yourself from all the other New York City point guards and create your name and your legend and legacy that you, you know, Skip to my Lou that we all know now?
Well, one thing I was huge on and growing up when I was playing in the summer leagues in New York City was I was a huge crowd pleaser. I was huge on getting the people off their feet at some point in the game and understanding that a lot of these events and leagues and stuff, the fans are a huge part of it. And you and I had a chance to play in the NBA, and we understand the fans are a huge part. So that was one way. That was always showing them something, giving them something to get off their feet. But the good thing was I was always a student of the game. And so because I didn't have that Sturbrook High School career, everyone knew and heard of me only through street ball. They always skipped to my Lou, the playground, the Rucker legend, the street ball legend. But a lot of people, only those guys you mentioned, the Stephon Marbury's, the God Sham Gods, Kareem Reeves, even Rod Strickland, Mark Jackson, when they came to see me, they knew that I was the furthest thing from that. That I can really play whatever style of game they wanted me to play. So when I was coming up in the ranks, when I went to junior college, went to college, and I got in the NBA, I could play whatever style they wanted to play. If you wanted to play a grind-out half-court game, I can give you that. If you wanted to get up and down, well, I was always in shape, and I could run, and I can lead the break, and I could see the floor. So I think at a certain point when I got to in my NBA career, which when I became a full-time starter pretty much the rest of my career, I think a lot of coaches understood that this guy could play whatever style he could play, and not only he could play it, I trust him with the ball. Another thing that amazed people was with all the ball handling, with all the passing, I wasn't a high turnover guy. And that's hard to be when you're doing all these moves and all these trickery passes.
That's a fact.
Is that I was always, I think my career, I think the last time I looked, I was trying to show my son that I think I was 3-1, almost 4-1 assist turnover. So I was trying to show him that. I was always a high assist, low turnover guy.
You just said you were able to play any style, which tells me that you were able to figure out or understand what it takes to transition from street ball to the NBA style, which we know is totally different. How were you able and not others?
No. That was the thing. I didn't have to transition when I got to the league. So when I got to the NBA, it was more of putting on more strength and stretching the defense. So it goes back to when I was saying we growing up in New York, we don't shoot the ball well. So when I got to NBA, if you notice, as my career evolved, I became more of a three-point threat. So after a while, leaving me behind a three-point line was not an option anymore. So that was the one thing. The one thing, I was such a student of the game, is being able to run a team. I always understood time, school, and situation. And I can get the guys the ball. So if scorers, if a Ray Allen's coming off the pick, I had no problem getting those guys the ball. If you were coming across a cross screen and you was popping, I can get that ball to you. If Yao Ming was posting up or McGray's ball, I had no issue making sure they get that ball. And people understand that's huge in the game, is being able to get the scorers the ball where they need the ball. The mentality is where I made the difference. Playground players, street ball players, especially when they come from the inner city, it's about them, right? It could be 3,000 fans. Those 3,000 fans came to see that one guy. They don't care if that guy loses, right? Whereas when you play, when you go and play on the higher levels, and you understand it's about the team, and you have to sacrifice a lot of your game and things that you're capable of doing for the betterment of the team. And you and I have watched so many of our colleagues do that, and some get scrutinized for it because, mate, sometimes their games, you know, you hold your game back because we got two Hall of Famers on the team. I got so many times questions asked to me when I was playing on certain teams in the NBA. It's like, man, Skip, why you don't do this? And I had to tell them, look, I'm playing with two future Hall of Famers. I have to get them the ball. And I have to play off of them. And I think people don't understand that mentality from a streetball guy and a guy that understands what it's going to take for him to make it and stay in that league. It's a hard adjustment because they're so used to everybody coming to see them and glorifying them. And they're so used to it being about them that it's a tough transition for them to understand that, you know, you have to be about the team.
You said it. Sacrifice. And it's a sacrifice. You're sacrificing your game. And I mean, that's well said.
You really broke down nicely, like, what it takes to translate to the NBA from somebody who's really good at, you know, street ball. But let's look in the other direction, because I think to your earlier points, like, regardless of what park or, you know, pro-am tournament you're playing in, and it can be as big as the Rucker or Dykeman, it could also be a huge, crazy crowd, epic, legendary game at Frederick Douglass or the Gaucho Gym on a rainout, like any court, there could be like legend made. What is it like for those NBA players who decide to insert themselves and come play, the pressure that they take on? And do you find that they all do well in these scenarios?
Me personally, they all do well. Me personally, they have the biggest situation going on. So they come there with, like, the pressure is really more on them than it would be the guy that has the legendary status out there already. Because now all attention is shifted on them for better or worse, right? I've seen NBA guys come to Ruck. I've seen NBA guys come to different tournaments in New York City and have 25 points. But because that other guy that everyone loves out there, they see every summer, scored 15 on that guy, they consider that guy got the best of the NBA player. You also have to understand, too, NBA player has to kind of take a step back because he can't get hurt out there. You see what I'm saying? So he can't go give them everything they desire. Because if he takes a chance of getting hurt, now he just messed up millions and millions and millions of dollars. So I had the chance to explain that to a lot of my guys out there, because I love my guys on the playground. I've come up with these guys. A lot of us known each other since we was five, 6 years old. But that's another thing what I'm trying to explain to about the mentality as well. It's like, I understand. You are good. You're damn good. But let's understand who that guy is that's walking through that park, that gate, that's playing the NBA, right? Vince Carter came out there, Kevin Durant, Kobe Bryant came out there, Steve Francis came out there, Baron Davis. Let's understand who that guy really is and understand that he has something serious to get ready for in the next couple of months. So him playing hard defense and going extra hard on offense, that may or may not happen for an entire game, is what I'm saying. It may not happen for an entire game. Mm-hmm. It's no disrespect to the guys that he's playing against, no disrespect to the fans of the park. It's that we are out here on asphalt. We are out here on cement. It's tough. For me, when I went back as an NBA player and played, it's tough for me because I have the legendary status out there. And here comes the next young up-and-coming, next skip to my loop. So now I have to think about, oh, wow, I'm rooting for the youngster, but I'm not rooting for you tonight. Not tonight. Tonight's not going to be your night. Not against me, but you are the next one. You know, I want to say in 1988, I had a chance to go out there in Rucker Park and watch a game. And the young guy that was tearing the older guys up, that was a skit to my little time, was Malloy Nesmith, the future. And everyone would come out. Everyone hanging on the grate, hanging in the trees, and watching the future. And I want to say 3 to 4 years later, I was that guy that everyone's hanging off the building, hanging off the bridge, and hanging out the bed. And then after I was gone, then here comes the next and the next. But, you know, like I said, you know, we all have that pride in us. And you know, I always said to myself, when that youngster come up behind me, just not the night I'm playing, please.
It's giving me goosebumps right now.
Right, right. For real, man.
I can see the imagery of everything you're describing. Like, that was a life I lived. You inspired so many hoopers coming up. Like, not exactly the same, but LeBron went and played at the Drew. Not a park, but still a pro-am. What was the significance to you of LeBron coming out and doing well and also showing up in this type of community tournament?
Here's the thing, and it is the thing, like when I said, when Vince, Kobe, those guys came out to Ruck and things like that, you know what's the greatest thing for, first off? All the people who don't get a chance to see these individuals
superstars
that go, that they don't have the luxury to go buy a ticket and go to the arena, right? So just think about that community where the Drew League's at, and you get to see LeBron. You know how many of those people don't get an L.A. Laker ticket and get a chance to go in that? Well, I can't call it Staples Center anymore. I forget these crazy names now. But anyway,
Crypto.com, yeah.
But anyway.
Staples, I got you.
They don't get a chance to go in there. Right? So that's who it's amazing for. And that's why you tip your hat to these men when they take time out their day or their summer. Because remember, when these guys are doing it, they could be anywhere else in the world with their family on vacation. He take the time out to do that. Now, it's a phenomenal thing to go out there and play and give and go in there, understand what's at stake. The other guy that's lined up against him, they're talking trash. His fans, they want to see him get the best of LeBron. You already got half the Laker people right now disappointed in what just transpired this past season. So for him to go out there and put himself on the front line like that lets you know what type of man he is. The one thing I said to somebody yesterday about it is, it's been done before, right? NBA guys going to these leagues, it's been done. No one's going to reinvent the wheel. Right? Connie Hawkins, World Be Free. Dr. J came to the Rucker Park.
Dr. J.
Julius, Vince Carter, Kobe Bryant, Baron Davis, Steve, they came to Rucker Park. So right now, the Drew League has that notoriety right now, as that's the Rucker right now of summer ball, the Drew League. You know, and I say, you can't reinvent it. Just the only thing that's different is the human being that's involved in it. So, you know, I explain that to people, right? So right now, the Drew, in about 5 or 6 years from now, it might be a league in Florida or Houston that's the crazy pro-am. And here they come.
They're going to follow. You're right. And I think every young superstar, you know, who's never had that experience, you must experience it one time. But just understand, when you step on that court or that asphalt, you're going to have to, I mean, it ain't just, let me just work on something. Like, it's some prideful people who are, like you said, getting that opportunity to play against LeBron, to play against DeRozan. You saw the dude who was in Debo's face, like, you know, and he go right at him, and he went to play off basketball. He attacked the rim, tried to dunk it. So, I mean, it's all, I mean, like you said, like, Roz, I'm getting chills just thinking about it and getting the opportunity to play, because I, you know, Tim Thomas, who was one of my guys, who's the one who talked me into doing it a long time ago, and I played in a couple of different leagues like that, and it's nothing like it. And I encourage guys to go out there, young stars, to do it.
Not to mention, a lot of our colleagues that are in the NBA, you got to think about where they come from. They don't have these type of leagues where they come from. Right?
I didn't have it like that.
So you go in Daytona, you go to Daytona Beach, Florida, you don't have a Rucker League. So, but you hear about it so much. So now you get the opportunity to go in there. So now you go in there, you feel like, okay, I'm here. I'm doing the people a good. I'm doing a golly thing by showing up and getting on this court. But once you go on that court, you realize, this is a serious business because them people want to see something. That guy you about to play against, he's gonna be right here the whole night. He's not giving you an inch. And you gotta remember too, this is their chance.
You're from New York. You grew up. You came up with this. But Vince, you know, I just heard you say that wasn't what your childhood was like playing basketball. But I know as a pro, you came and jumped in on these tournaments. What was it like for you to play? And where did you play? It was the Rucker, right?
I played everywhere.
Rucker, yeah. But it rained out. But I'm saying I did. I mean, I played on a few of them. But I mean, Rucker was the one. And we ended up at the Gaucho
gym.
Because it rained out. Yeah, because it was a rain out. But, you know, it was an opportunity for me. And like you say, you step in there. I mean, you could just feel the energy. It had the energy of a playoff game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because of the excitement. And you know, it didn't matter. You get switched off a dude. You come out there like, okay, cool. Then, it was a whole lot of game?
Yeah.
That's what I play. Yeah, I mean, they trying to make their mark. And I was like, okay, all right, we got to turn this up a little bit. All right, and then go. And I wanted to ask you, Skip, do you feel like today's game with social media like it is now? Like, I mean, obviously, you know, we had video and obviously our games. And like when I play, you know, there's video of it, but it's just a different. Do you think a lot of these guys are hesitant to go out there and play in this game because of the showing that they might not have and the backlash from it? Because for me, it was more of an honor. I didn't care about the backlash because I was confident in who I was.
Right.
I was like, bro, I play against the best guys in the world. Now, and some of the best guys in the world, let me say, are not all in the NBA, but at the same time, I was not afraid to go out there, not to fail. I didn't think I'd fail. But I knew I had to go and do my thing because they wanted to see what I could do, you know, and I wasn't afraid of that.
Was it easy? Would you honestly say it was it easier for you to play against them than the pros?
I don't know about easier. I think it was more pressure in the beginning kind of to go out there and do it. And once I got going, I'm like, bro, it's still basketball. You still you. And, you know, and when I got in the mode, like, okay, all right, hold up. Bring this thing to the block, because that's back when I posted up, like, look, let's go, and then start doing my thing. And you know, and it was just basketball, and it's good competition. I love playing basketball. Rock, I play, you know, I play my AAU ball? Patterson, New Jersey.
Oh, Patterson, okay, New Jersey.
I played for PC. Me and Tip Thomas and Cole ended up playing. So I didn't play, like, the guys, like, that's what basketball, because Charlton Clark. You know, guys like that I met at Five Star. These guys loved playing basketball, and I loved the energy. That's what New York basketball was about. Florida was a football state kind of when I started, so not the best players in Florida didn't really play. Like you said, they were just out doing whatever they do. So I was looking for the best competition. I lived with Tim Thomas majority of the summer, where I almost moved to Patterson, New Jersey to go there because of the competition. Like, I loved it that much, you know, and I played against everybody and got a chance to just be a part of that culture, and it was nothing like it. Nothing like it.
And I think that's what helps us in New York City. What people don't understand is, like, what Vince said is that basketball for us on the East Coast, especially, in, you know, like I said, Patterson, New Jersey is right over the bridge. It's not like you're far from New York City. We play against those guys a lot. They come across. We go across there and play in their tournaments. You know, I had the luxury to watch Tim. Yeah, you got. I'm a little older than you guys, a couple of years. I had a chance to watch him come up, and another phenomenal player, person, teammate. But it's a way of life for us in the East Coast. Basketball's number one, number two, and number three in New York City. Whereas I live in Texas now, football's king. He's from Florida, football's king. Like, so they're grooming you in Florida and Texas time to be a football player first. New York City, as soon as a son is born, they might put a basketball in that crib or that stroller. And they're going to put a basketball. And that's how it was for us. Like, basketball's everything to us in New York City. Roz could tell you that. She grew up in a place where two of the most legendary point guards, Kenny Smith, Kenny Anderson, grew up right there in Left Rack, Queens. So When these people see this point guard documentary, you're going to understand not only the game, you understand almost why it was so important to us growing up. We were pushed to be basketball players from birth, right? And people don't understand, we put all our eggs into this basket. I could tell everybody myself, like, I go speak at universities sometimes, I speak with kids, and at the end they ask me, what would you have done if you didn't play basketball? And I tell them, for me, it's an unfair question because I can't tell you what else I would be. Because I know I grew up in a time where you were pushed and bred and born to be a basketball player in New York City.
Wow. I can't wait to see this because, like, you just named a laundry list of people. I either played with them or played against them because I'm 45. Like, we're around the same age. And, you know, Mark Jackson was my teammate. Rod Strickland was my teammate. Me and Steph played at McDonald's with each other and played against them at Georgia Tech. Played against Kenny Anderson, like Kenny Smith, Caroline. Like, I just, all of these guys, just like it's just, that is.
You had a chance to be around pretty much everybody that's going to be in it. Everyone that's going to be in it, and some New York City guy. I had a chance to speak. I ran to another New York City guy, went to North Carolina, and I hope they don't edit it. I mentioned his name when I said it. I used to take the train or bus to watch this guy play, and I thought he was a phenomenal point guard growing up, and that was Derek Phelps. I just thought he was phenomenal.
Yes, sir.
I thought he was phenomenal. And at that time, when he was a point guard at Christ the King, he played with another guy that lived in my neighborhood, Cliff Reeves. I said to people, you don't see a guy in New York City play this type of defense on a AAU high school level the way Derek Phelps played. And then the way he was – Derek Phelps could run a team in junior high school and high school. That's how good he was. Again, another guy just couldn't shoot the ball.
That's crazy.
You still watch some of his games right now in North Carolina, like, man, he wouldn't shoot the ball. So
he just got to the rack.
Yeah, but as far as running your team and guarding that ball, he was phenomenal.
All right, people, we're brought to you by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app ever, and honestly, the only one you need. It's not just about the big bonuses and boosts and promos that you get. It's the fact that every time you bet, whether you win or lose, you're earning towards the types of perks only Caesars can offer: free stays, concert tickets, bonuses, and more. That's because when you download the Caesars Sportsbook app, you become a Caesars Rewards member, and that means perks. Must be 21 or older to gamble. Gambling problem? Call or text 1-800-522-4700.
Y'all watching right now, make sure you check out Showtime's New York City Point Guards. It's coming out July 29th. You're going to see Rafer Alston there, Skip Malou, all the different teammates that both of you guys have mentioned playing with. But I know that you two were teammates. You've overlapped in the NBA. Yeah. So I'd love to hear from both of you what it was like to be teammates with one another.
Well, I'll go first because you mentioned – let me go first, Skip, before I'm going to let you go because you mentioned something earlier and you, like, one thing you knew is, like, you know, how you transition from it's about you as far as playing, the Rucker and street ball, and then coming to the NBA understanding how to distribute the ball and be, like, you weren't lying. Like, one thing I can say, like, he knew how to play the game. He knew time to score. And we talking about, I got the opportunity. I've been blessed to play with some of the we considered the best point guards in the game. I played with Mark Jackson. I played with Steve Nash. I played with Jay Kidd. And Skip is Skip's ability to run a team, put guys in position, distribute the basketball to guys. Like, I consider great point guards guys who can distribute the ball where you just catch the ball and put it in. It's no extra work needs to be done. And that made my gamer. That made me. I mean, people are like, oh, man, this boy can score. Yes, I could score one-on-one, but I could also score off a catch and shoot because the work was already done. The ball is already there, catch and shoot. Like, that's the one thing about Skip that, you know, and everybody, you know, and you know this, and it probably wasn't fair to you. Everybody wanted to see everybody wanted to see it. And I was with him. Everybody, Skip, you know, Skip up the court. Skip up, Joe, do your thing. Why you ain't do your thing? But he understood the difference. And it's like, and I kind of related it to me, like working out before a game. But everybody was like, Vince, dunk it, because that's all they wanted to see. But he had so much more to offer than just his ability to dribble the ball. He was able to distribute and run a team. And what you played?
11
years. 12, how long you played?
11.
That's what I'm saying.
11. And they don't
you
give
were able
my,
to play
they don't
11
give me credit
years.
For the 12. But they, so my 12th year was supposed to be actually the first time I had a chance to play in Toronto's when I got called up for the 10-day. But because I didn't play a lot of games that season, they don't give me credit for a full year. So that really would be my 12th okay. year.
So 12 years.
So, that's, right. Yeah, so, but it was phenomenal. So the first time I got to Toronto, that was on a 10-day contract. A lot of those guys were hurt. And I come in and I'm playing. So here's the funny thing about New York City again. So I'm playing for a phenomenal basketball player, phenomenal coach, New York guy, Lenny Wilkins. So I get the 10-day. I'm going up there. As I'm on my way up there, my phone is going crazy. Like, you know you're about to play for. And that's what that's you know, everybody in New York's like, that's our guy. So people don't know how much Lenny Wilkins, what he means to New York City. So, and I know a lot of guys on the Raptors, they don't know what Lenny Wilkins means the world to us. He's another iconic figure as far as point guard in New York City. And I think DC and those guys were hurt. And I come up there and to see, unfortunately, the Raptor season was going this way because of all those guys were hurt. And Lenny Wilkins just put the ball in my hand just right away. And did I think I would come up there and I have a stretch where I'm averaging 20 points? The answer is no. But I went on a tear. and it was just Rafer mania and this, that, and the third. And I got interviewed by the media in Toronto. And they asked me, what's going to happen when those guys come back? When Vince and Antonio, Alvin, all these guys were hurt at the time. And I said, this is the respect I have for these guys, and this is the respect I have for the game in the NBA. And I knew where I was. I said, more than likely, I should be waived or I go to the bench. The people looked at me and laughed. I said, no. I said, these are phenomenal guys. These guys in battle their way to conference semis, conference finals before. I think the conference semis, because the previous year, 2 years ago, I was on the bench in Milwaukee, and they lost to Philly, and we played them in conference finals. So, I mean, they played grueling series with New York, grueling series. I mean, it was just year in, year out. So, you know, I knew. The exciting part was I'd probably get a chance to play with Vince, and I thought, like, you know, at least before I go, I could throw some lobs and do some things with Vince. This would be amazing. God works mysterious ways. 2 years later, I signed a 6-year deal. I come back. We get off to a good preseason start. I mean, we had some preseason games where I'm hitting him on the break. He's just scooping up, dunking it.
Yes. I'm just like,
wow. And I think we had a game again in LA against the Clippers. And one time I just came down with a left-hand rifle and just threw it to him. He just whipped it. And I said, man, it's unbelievable. So, you know, I had a chance to live out a dream or fantasy in my head that, yeah, man, I'm going to throw some lobs to Vince Carter. I'm going to throw some passes. and like I said, and you know, obviously Vince got traded that year. As a guy who's been in the league all that time, and you know, this is my 7th year in the league, I've been on some teams and I've been around some players. It didn't hurt. It didn't bother because I understood the reasons why. It's the same reason I look at when Kevin Durant wanted to go to the Warriors. It's the same reason I go look at Vince Cousin. I go to his house, Tracy McGrady, all the time. And I look at his body and I'm like, you know, you go so many years carrying a team and people don't understand the wear and tear on your body and mentally the drain it had. And so, when we lost Vince that year, I understood, even though for me, it was crushing because I'm like, wow, I wanted to be in the backcourt with him. I thought we had a chance to be at least a solid playoff team. I thought for sure with Vince, we'd be a playoff team. But, you know, things happen. But like I said, I had a chance to be around him. I had a chance to play with him. And like I said, it was a fantasy and dream of mine to throw some lob, throw some pass, which I've had to do. It was phenomenal.
What was the highlight of your NBA career? And what was the highlight of your street ball career?
I'll go to the latter first. The highlight of my street ball career was the whole entire journey. Because I'm around people who've watched me come up and grow up. They watch me be immature. They watch me mature. I'm around people that when I was struggling attending class, just keep instilling in me, you gotta turn around, you gotta do the right thing. So the street ball actually paved the way for my perseverance, because I went the long route. So I did the street ball. I was ineligible most of my high school career. Pretty much after my sophomore year, because my sophomore year of high school, I averaged put up 25 points per game as a sophomore, as a 14-year-old kid playing against varsity. So I was tearing these guys up. But it paved the way for my perseverance. You know what I'm saying? So, and that's why I ended up going to junior college. I ended up going to Fresno State. And I played 3 years in Milwaukee. Then no team picked me up. I went to the G League for a week. Toronto picked me up. They didn't bring me back. I thought they would bring me back to be Alvin Williams' backup, at least a full-time backup. I was looking forward to that. But I ended up signing a one-year deal with Miami. I end up coming back to Toronto on a six-year deal. So when I think about my NBA, the highlight, obviously, to be able to take care of your family for the rest of your life would be the six-year deal with Toronto, because that was my only big deal, my last deal in the NBA. But I had so many highlights in the NBA. Like, I've been fortunate to be around. There's a chance I might have played with some of the probably if not the most Hall of Famers in my career. Vince McGrady, Yao Ming, Ray Allen.
Ray.
I probably got some more that I probably haven't mentioned, but I've had luxury, and I've been in some good cities. I've been in some great situations. I've been on a team that won 22 in a row, which was unheard of until the Miami Heat with LeBron, the Big Three, they end up doing something phenomenal. But before that, winning 22 in a row was huge. I had a stretch in my career where I set a record in Miami when they said I couldn't shoot. I set a record for the most consecutive games with a three-point shot. I hit over 100-plus threes 1 year in Toronto when people would back off me. I've had so many highlights. I hit a game winner in Miami over Sean Bradley that sticks with me every day. It sticks with me. Like, who would ever think about it? That's something you dream about in the park or the playground. You count down 5, 4, 3, 1. You just let – and I actually lived that moment. I had a chance to play with a guy that lived in my neighborhood who is like a little brother to me. He was on the same team, Miami, Lamar Odom. So there's so many highlights I've had in the NBA. I think the ultimate highlight in the NBA, what obviously Vince would attest to, is I played in the NBA Finals with the Orlando Magic, and I couldn't trade that in for nothing in the world. It was an unbelievable accomplishment. It was phenomenal to see a city, to me, go from a kind of a Mickey Mouse in golf town to a city that I could pull up to the gas station. It's like, Mr. Austin, just fill your car up and go. And it's like, wow. I was like, hey, you know, I couldn't even get enough of the city. I couldn't get enough of the city at the time that some nights it was hard for me to go to sleep because I had to soak it all in what I was a part of. And there were some nights that I'll share with you guys. I think Vince might have been in town one night, but I'll say one night we have a big game, the finals the next day. I just went out and party, and I'm like, and people looking at me in the party like, you have a game? I'm like, listen, I couldn't. It was just, I wanted to be around the people because it was just an amazing accomplishment to get to be the last two teams standing in the world. You know, people in other countries were watching, people all over were watching, and I had a big respect for the city of Orlando. To this day, I go back and forth there. I think I'm due back there in August. So, to me, that's one of the greatest comps I ever chance. And to play against, you know, may he rest in peace, to play against probably arguably one of the greatest players ever, Kobe Bryant. I had a chance to see why these guys are so good, you know. I played against Vince. Like I said, I had a chance to watch him score a lot when I was in Milwaukee and didn't get a chance to play with these guys. Like, oh, these guys are phenomenal basketball players because they have to face the double team. They have to face scouting and coaching that's geared to stop them every single night, but yet they still find a way to come away with 25 and 30 points. I watched Kobe Bryant, that shoot around and everything. The whole board in the locker room is to stop him on every play on that board, and he still found a way to score 35 and 40, and it's just you you tip your hat and respect these people, these men that play on that level.
And the way you described that, there was nothing else but basketball. Like, I went to Stanford to play basketball. I never even considered football until I went to college. The only thing I knew was basketball, like you said. I remember when the boys team from Christ the King came to play at Malloy, it was Omar Cook's birthday. And he dropped like 40 on us on his birthday. And then all the Christ the King kids sang happy birthday to him in our court. And it was just legendary. And so it's not like I see Omar Cook around or even know him that well personally. But when I saw it come up on Twitter and then I saw him at Summer League this summer in Vegas, the wealth of emotion you have, the respect you have, because you know what it took to come up in New York and what those days was like, you know, just the energy of the court, the street, high school, New York City, then breaking out into college. And then for the few like yourself who found successful careers in the NBA, it's an era. It absolutely is an era. And so listening to you wax poetic about it was really special today. Thank you so much, Rafer. Like, it was great to hear from you.
Thank you. Always a pleasure, my guy.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.